Will the House please come to order? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you come to the desk for a moment, please? The House is going to stand at ease for just a few minutes. Thank you. Will the House please come to order? We are on third reading, amendment number 25. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 25 to House Bill 1. Ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, this is just a continuation of the conversations that this House has really started with the university. You recall 2 years ago we appropriated $1.6 million in AML funding to the School of Energy Research to conduct uranium research under a number of guidelines. We've had a statewide task force working. We have the largest uranium mine in the country. And so a lot of good's coming. We've now got research going out on exploration, production, operations, restoration, regulations, and assessment of safety and sustainability of in-situ recovery. There's more work to come. Now, this amendment, in which, you know, the provost knows about, the director of the SER, the vice president for research, and they're all on board, and this is the thing that every initiative we've ever done all begins with talk. And, you know, the Hathaway Scholarship began with conversations. The Pipeline Authority began with conversations, and then eventually action took. So I'm going to go out and look around what other schools are doing, and maybe there's something we can put in our engineering program, not a new program, but maybe a specialization, perhaps. They want to take a little chance to look at it. Doesn't cost any money. And to really look at putting a little added value to our uranium, I think probably the first thing would be processing, just in my mind. But who knows? Those folks will take a look at it and see where we go. So I'd just stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This doesn't look bad. It's not bad. But the fact is we are what we are. We have a lot of resources. We have a lot of uranium. We are not a competitor at the university level in the area of nuclear energy or studies or research. And we will not be. We're too far from the loads. These are usually sited near the loads. I'm confident enough to say that I know, but I really don't know, whether a basic course in the School of Energy Resources refers to nuclear energy. I'm sure it does. I don't know how much of a background it gives them, but it certainly exposes the students to the fact that this is a clean source of energy going forward, a very important source of energy going forward, and one in which many countries are already ahead of us in both research and application. But that doesn't mean that our university should be directed to do something that doesn't generate within the School of Energy Resources or the College of Engineering at the present time. I urge you to oppose this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too rise to speak against the amendment. I have every hope, absolute hope, for a robust nuclear energy industry in Wyoming. I do not think the university is well served by shall directives from the state legislature aimed at the Board of Trustees and the university to work on programs. Along with other members of this body, I sat for a number of years as a member of that Board of Trustees and found those to be most unwelcome communications coming to the university from this body. Thank you very much. Vote against. I hope to encourage you to vote against the amendment.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment. And I don't think this is a shallow proposal here. We're kind of directing our state university to maybe think about the future. And frankly, I respect the gentleman from the other side of Togetee Pass. I know he likes this energy source, and I don't disagree with what he said. We're behind. We're way behind. And whether we could ever catch up and really make a difference, I don't know. But this amendment doesn't cost anything. All it is directing them to look at it, give us some numbers, and then we can revisit this and see if we want to do something. So, Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for, in favor of the amendment, you can see I'm one of the co-sponsors. This is a look to see what, if anything, does fit in this area of nuclear engineering expansion to kind of optimize a resource that we've got in this state and maybe develop something beyond just the production and shipping. And so I think it's worthwhile, and I think the School of Energy Resources was contacted. I think that's something that they would help participate in, as would the rest of the academic community if we pass the amendment. So I urge your support of the amendment.
Harshman. Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I appreciate the view from the two former trustees. And but I think, you know, that's what this body does. We directed the university to even establish the School of Energy Resources. Now we're directing the carbon sequestration effort. And so that's what we do here. We make policy. And it's our state land-grant university, and this is a huge resource for Wyoming, one of the largest in the entire world, and perhaps there's a way we can add value to it so we don't have a $4 billion plant built 80 miles from our border in Idaho. And so it's a matter of just continuing the talk, and you know how these things are. It takes years and years and conversations. So appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 25. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 25 has failed. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. The amendment fails. Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 12 to House Bill 1, and I ask for your favorable consideration. If you will recall, I ran a second reading amendment that deleted the language on the fiber optic loop that you'll see on page 35 of the budget. It was in a footnote, and it was not the will of the body at that time that we remove that language. So I would like to add some additional language onto the end of that footnote, which was footnote number 2. So if you will turn to page 35 of your budget, after connections, we would add amendment that you see before you, that prior to the expenditure of any funds under this footnote, the university shall first engage in a competitive bid process for comparable dedicated fiber optic lines leased from the private sector, including a full evaluation of the costs over the life of the project. Only if construction of a connection to the state's dark fiber is less costly than all responsible bids received shall the university expend any funds in constructing such a connection. Otherwise, the university shall secure an agreement with the winning responsible bidder through the competitive bid process under this footnote. Mr. Chairman, this was language that was developed with the help of our university and as well as with private sector. So I would encourage your favorable consideration. Thank
Anyone
you.
Else for their first time? Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a couple of other amendments too today, so this is, in my view, an important amendment, so please vote aye.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? We're voting on third reading amendment number 12. Please, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 12 is passed. Representative Kraft. Representative Brown, would you come up, please? Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 22 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. This particular amendment addresses school funding, and it does not address the amount. It has nothing to do with any additional money. What it has to do with is the timing of payments. And, of course, school finance is confusing, and school finance amendments are confusing. But what this actually basically says is that districts that are entitlement districts actually have two funding sources. They have their county monies, and they also have their state monies from the school foundation. Now, those foundation payments are made to counties, or excuse me, to school districts on August 15th, October 15th, and February 15th. The county payments are made somewhere towards the end of November and sometimes towards the end of May, somewhere towards, which creates a bit of a cash flow issue for some of these districts who receive the majority of their money from the county, less than 20% from the foundation, which then means that they can experience a cash flow problem where money that they need for day-to-day operations is there and is coming to them, but it is not currently available for them. So when this issue was brought to my attention, I did have quite a lot of discussion with the school finance analyst here at the department, and that's what led to this amendment. And the department also pointed out yet another problem that these districts encounter, and that's that the data from the prior school year is what's used for that August payment. So you're not getting the current payment or the current year data. So with this amendment, the payment is still going to be made on August 15th from the foundation. But by September 1st, the district will recalculate the estimated amounts based on current year data. And what they will do is they will make loans available to districts kind of on their own money on September 15th. They will be districts will be assessed an interest rate on that loan of no more than 6%. Districts then have to repay that money by January 1st. There's not very many districts that this affects. There's probably three, but it has been an issue for those three particular districts. So what this amendment does that came on the advice of the school finance analyst at the department. This is merely a process that they recommend that they think will make it easier for those districts. There's no new money. It just eliminates some of those cash flow problems for districts that are experiencing them and actually just makes it a little easier for them to access the funding that they would be receiving during that school year anyway. That's the amendment, and I would stand for questions.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no argument with the procedure. The argument I have, it looks to me like this ought to be on a bill that would make it permanent. We're going to do this for 2 years, and then we're going to fall back and do it the old way after that. It looks to me like we're trying to do a little normal legislation here that ought to be done in a normal manner rather than attached to a budget bill. And so on that basis, I will oppose the amendment.
Representative Harsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on the, I guess to me it looks like there's new money coming from somewhere on the 6% interest payment. And I'm just wondering where that's coming from. And is it taken before or after, basically, the payments are made to the state? Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was approached about this situation at the last day of our last Education Committee meeting, and we didn't have time to address this issue and look at it through thoroughly. So I talked with Representative Kraft, and we decided that this might be the way to do it for this budget period, and then we can bring some permanent legislation that was suggested. And the reason this comes about is some of these districts, to borrow some of this money, it costs them up to $50,000 right off the top, and then they're paying these interest rates. With the interest rate here, I think the last thing I saw through this foundation was about 4.5% things were taking place. But we felt that maybe this was something where we could earn some interest for our school foundation account. It's more than a lot of the others they have, and save the districts a considerable amount of cost until we have time to vet this issue a little better. On and for the amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? For the second time, before the sponsor. Representative Kraft.
Thank you very much. We would like to bring this as a bill. That was absolutely our choice. We, as the good chairman of education said, this actually, we became aware of this at the very tail end, so there wasn't the opportunity to bring it as a bill. We certainly intend to do that for the next session. But in the meantime, these districts that it affects are having to just make up those cash flow, those shortfall kinds of things, having to borrow money at some pretty nasty kinds of rates in terms of getting the insurance, getting the bonding, all that kind of thing. One district did pay $50,000. Now, they are the ones paying the interest. That's not the foundation. That's not the state. That's the school district that will be paying the interest. And when I contacted the affected districts and asked them if they would be willing to, because that was a question that was asked, is, so, okay, so we redistribute the funding times. Well, if they get money early, shouldn't they be having to pay some interest on that? And initially, I wasn't thinking about interest. But when I contacted the districts, they said they'd be delighted. They would be fine with paying interest. It isn't the interest that bothers them. It's all the other costs associated with securing an outside loan that creates such difficulty for them. So they were perfectly willing to take on an interest rate that they felt to be fair, and 6%, in their opinion, was more than fair. So that's where the 6% comes from. It comes from the districts to the school foundation account. With all of that in mind, I would urge you to support Amendment 22. Thank you very much.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 22 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment passes. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill 1, Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill 1. First off, among all the trees that lay dead on top of your desk is one that there's a number of spreadsheets that you have up there, but one of them says amendment number 14 at the top. And I wanted to bring your attention to this and make this amendment just so you could kind of get an idea of what's happened in our permanent mineral trust fund over the last few years. If you find that spreadsheet, the top part of the spreadsheet says actual or historical actual accounting in the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. And the top numbers are the beginning book value, which is basically the cost basis, which is how much money we have been able to put into the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund since 2004. You can see how it has grown from $2,056,000,000 to this year $4,381,000,000. Then the next columns under that show where the monies have come from. Some of those additions to the corpus were additions made from severance taxes. That's constitutional. Some of the additions were made from reversions from the reserve account. And the permanent fund and our other funds have reserve accounts. And of the monies that aren't spent that are generated from those funds, if there's extra money, they go into the reserve accounts. And then when those reserve accounts reach a certain level, that extra money that's in the reserve account automatically trips back into the corpus of that fund. And that the legislature established that in order to have a mechanism to inflation-proof the permanent funds. And then you can see under that there's a line that are additions that are made from additional legislative deposits. And these are millions of dollars that the state has been able to add over the time in the years that we had surpluses and we were able to fund all the projects that we had. And it looked like we still had a little bit of money, and we were able to put that in the permanent funds. You can see that the total of the amounts from the reversions and the additions that the legislature made comes out to around $441 million. That's off on the far right. Now, the next portion below that would have been, how does this stack up to what the actual inflation has been since 2004? And once again, you can see the beginning book values. That's not counting the monies that have come from the reversions, but just the amount that have come from severance taxes and what the legislature put in. And then you can see the historic annual rate of inflation over that time. And then the next column is that would be the amount of money in order to inflation-proof the fund. And the reason inflation-proofing the fund is important, as we talked about that a little bit this morning, and I like the analogy of comparing it to building an asset such as a highway, that unless you do maintain that asset and put some reserves back into it, some money into it, it'll slowly deteriorate. And the purchasing power that you would get from that savings account would be less every year. So compared to a highway analogy, is the next year you couldn't go quite as fast that year as what you did this year because the road would be deteriorating, and every year you'd have to go slower unless you maintain your road. So you can see to the far right there's $437 million was about what it was, what would have been required to inflation-proof the permanent mineral funds. And it just so happens that we added $441 million over the last 5 or 6 years. And so we have just about essentially inflation-proof our permanent mineral trust fund between what went out of the reserve account and what the legislature would add to the fund. This kind of gives you some background, too, for what the Select Committee on Capital Finance and Investments is looking at in trying to figure out where we want to go in the future with the idea of inflation proofing and treating the various realized and unrealized gains. And you'll hear all of that next legislative session. Now, what does that have to do with the proposal? The proposal goes to page 68 and 69 of the budget bill, and there what the budget bill proposes to do is not allow any of that money to go into the reserve account, but it shifts it to other areas, one of those areas being to cities and counties. So the amendment is to not shift that, because if we shift that money, we will be making no effort to inflation-proof the permanent, and I'm just going to use the permanent mineral trust fund as an example. We'll be making absolutely no effort to do that, and if we adopt the amendment, we'll at least put $26 million into the permanent fund. That $26 million, though, $20 million of that has been directed towards cities and counties. So we can't just do this alone, because there's no way just to pull $20 million out of the sky. So the last part of the amendment has to do with page 116, and that has to do with the budget reserve account. And currently, I'm not sure I can find that in our goldenrod, is we were going to add some monies from the budget reserve account into the legislative stabilization reserve. Anyway, it was somewhat over $20 million. And what this proposal is to take that cities and counties monies from that direction and preserve the amounts of money that is going into the permanent fund so that there will at least be a little bit of inflation proofing there and use the money from the budget reserve account to fund the cities and the counties, which in essence leaves the legislative stabilization reserve, our rainy day fund, at 700 and some million. It doesn't increase it by 20 million. So that's the proposal, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm a little puzzled about how you come up with the numbers, because we're diverting right now, by statute, 1% more of our severance tax revenues to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund than constitutionally required. I thought that was one of the things that we've been doing. And in your figures, you've figured all those different things in there, and that doesn't work in my mind to be that way. So when I first came down here, we weren't diverting any of that because we needed that flow of money. And as we got extra money, then I believe it was Senate File 43 or 23 was introduced that reestablished that 1% flow from the severance taxes to go towards helping build an inflation-proof that fund. So I think this gets a little over my head, but I like what we're doing right now with what we're doing, and I think I'm opposed to this amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it really just kind of comes down to our philosophy, and I think it's important to keep in mind, folks, that we're kind of all down here talking about cuts. We're at like the second highest budget in our history. We're like we were about 4 years ago. We thought it was the richest we'd ever be. And so the philosophy that we departed on last year, which the good chairman from Sheridan County is trying to reverse, and I think I'm all in support of this amendment, because now what we're trying to say is that, well, we can just kind of keep growing our operating budgets. And let's face it, cities and towns now are part of our operating budgets. We're going to fund them. Who's going to come with zero? I don't think it's going to happen. And so now we start taking money from the which would go to the permanent fund. We're going to say, okay, we're going to siphon off part of that percent or percent and a half that statutorily goes into the permanent fund. Last year it was half of 1%, I think, we held back. Now we're going to use it for operating. That's the way it is in a budget. It's using it for operating funds because it's going to cities, towns, and counties. And I know, yeah, you can say that's not like the health department, but, you know, be that soul who brings the amendment to take it to zero. See how much support you get. So it is an operating cost. I believe that. And I think what the good chairman is trying to say is that, or at least how I see it from this amendment, is that we're just not going to expand our operating budgets at the expense of savings. We'll find a way to get the $20 million. I mean, we'll find a way to do that, whatever we need. But at some point, we've got to say, whoa, because that's why we're still in pretty good shape, because we've done so well with one-time projects, one-time things. And if we keep expanding operating budgets, it's going to get scary. I mean, it could get us into a real structural deficit. And so I urge your support, and I appreciate the thoughtful amendment and how you presented it. And it's good for us, and we get new people all the time. It's just good to continue to talk about this permanent mineral trust, how we're trying to inflation-proof it and really grow it. Because if this would have been the policy all along from its inception, you know, there'd be well over $20 billion in the account. It'd be a huge account. And we've just gotten on the path here in just the last decade, and look what we've done. We've hit 4 by 10, and now we ought to set a new goal. So hold down operating budgets, one-time things. That's how we're going to control this budget. And appreciate the amendment and urge your support. Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I am following this correctly, what the amendment proposes to do is to delete Section 301 of the budget bill. And if that is the case, that's not something we want to be doing. We need to build up our cash reserves. I think the Appropriations Committee made the right call that until the end of the 2012 biennium, we don't have spillover into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. That's not what we need to be doing right now. I think that was a thoughtful approach of the Appropriations Committee, and I'm having trouble understanding the shift. And if I'm incorrect in my understanding, I would request the sponsor to put me right.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of the remarks that were made by one of the gentlemen from the Appropriations Committee. In 2001, we de-earmarked, folks. What we did is we said, okay, anything over $200 million, any mineral revenue royalties over $200 million now flows to the general fund, where those flowed before by formula to cities, counties, towns, water development, university, community colleges, and we said we capped them. The flow is there below $200 million. And the same thing with the severance taxes. We capped it at $155 million. So, yes, we are now funding these things out of the out of our general fund, because that's what we told them we'd do. So to say that we have, you know, they're now like the health department, yes, they are. We made them that way. We said, come to us with your needs, and we will take care of you if we had budget enough to do that. And when we start taking some of these funds that were available to do these kind of things and putting them someplace else until after the budget, like, that's why I like the process we're in. We wait and we see, and then by a date, these funds then divert. And so I'd like to see us stay with that process so we can tell what we're doing. But when we earmarked, we put a lot of people into our general fund budget that was never there before. On and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had distributed for the body a history of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund going back to 1975. Last year, we diverted a half of percentage, roughly, of Permanent Mineral Trust Fund money into the Spending Policy Reserve account for a year in case we needed it this year. And again, the Appropriations Committee wisely decided to prevent the spillover of that money, which we just diverted last year, back into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. This amendment undoes that decision. And we don't need to do that. And we shouldn't do that. Because we face a very uncertain economic future, as the good representative from Laramie County, with little hair left on his head, said earlier today. I told him I was going to quote him, but I couldn't think of a good way to do it. But if you happen to have the sheet handy, if you don't, that's fine. But just to remind the body, in fiscal year 05, when we had an amazing amount of money, in addition to the nearly $169 million that went in, there was a direct appropriation of $52 million. Bottom line, 2006, nearly $600 million into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. 2007, 368, 2008, 555 million, 2009, $484,481,000 into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. We don't need to stop. We don't need to allow the spillover to continue this year when we have cities and towns and counties and people hurting in this state. We have the highest unemployment we've had in 26 years, and it's not going to get better right away, folks. We're not the hot area for natural gas anymore. We don't need to throw this money into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund for some future. Well, it's just not the best place for the money right now. So I urge you to defeat the amendment.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman Landon. Oh, sorry, Representative Harshman. He kind of z-horses up to the mic.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yeah, late again. I don't know what it's been this year. I've just been 5 minutes late. Mr. Chairman, I just want to talk about time to look at things. And the language that's being proposed for deletion on page 68 just talks about something that's going to happen on June 30th, 2012. Okay? And or that actually we're going to have time. We'll tip some this. If this amendment goes through, we'll tip some this July. But we're going to have time to come back and look at our budget next year. And if we want to put this language in, it'd be appropriate then. But I don't. You know, this is just standard language we put in to hold that. But I don't think there's anything wrong. I think that the idea is right to find money for our ongoing costs out of our budget. And that's what this does by taking it out of the budget reserve account. And then we'll be back here in a year, and if we want to hold some money back like we did last year in a general session, we can do that again. And it would allow this $26 million to go forward. And so it's really just a philosophy. If we're going to expand our operating budgets at the expense of our savings account. That's really, I think, how I boil it down in my mind. And I think we can find the money in the budget. It's there. We can pull it out of the budget reserve account for this worthy cause. And it just won't be as much tip into the LSRA. That's all this is really about. So thank you on and for the amendment.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the discussion that's gone on, and I think that it's also accurate to portray this as a philosophical discussion. And the way I'd like to frame it is whether we should take this opportunity to preserve the purchasing power of the earnings generated from the funds. Is inflation is an eroding force on the purchasing power of these. And this amendment is just to ask the body for a gut check of saying, while we're funding all these other important services of government, should we also fund and make an effort to preserve the funds that are in the permanent funds? And that's what the amendment is trying to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A little bit of a distraction there. We're voting on amendment, third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment's failed. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a revised list that's been distributed, and we're working off the revised list. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 35 to House Bill 1. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 35 to House Bill 1. And ladies and gentlemen, this is on our Section 300s that we were just speaking on, the Spending Policy Reserve Account, the AML funding, and the NCAR supercomputer. And what we need to do here is, based on the JAC budget, we had intended for these sections to have right after each of them effective immediately, and that date was not, that wording wasn't put in when we drafted the bill. So I would ask for your favorable aye.
Anyone else for their first time? Question being called. We're voting on amendment number 35, third reading amendment number 35 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 35 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 1. Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This regards the major maintenance funding for the state facilities, the university, and the community colleges. What happened in the Appropriations Committee is that we were talking about the size of many of the major maintenance projects that are happening. And as they're growing in size, some of them are exceeding $1 million, and the Appropriations Committee thought it was wise and had language that said for any major maintenance projects that exceeded $1 million that they would have to come back before the legislature for approval. And what this language simply does is it removes from that category the maintenance projects that are part of the ERA stimulus funds, because those funds are already very heavily restricted by the federal regulations. And so this was requested by other members of the JAC and also by those the community colleges that we exempt for that coming back to the legislature for approval those ERA projects, since they are already heavily regulated with the federal funds. And for that reason, I would hope that you would support the passage of this amendment number 5.
Anyone for the first time? Question being called. We're voting on third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment, third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 1 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 17 to House Bill 1. And ladies and gentlemen, what we have before you is in regard to the AML funding. This has to do with any revenue that would be generated from the School of Energy Resources on their projects that are state-owned, and where those profits, if there were any, would come back to. And I would ask for your favorable consideration. I will tell you that in our House Appropriations this morning, when we discussed this amendment, that we thought there might be some better language, and I think Mr. Speaker will help us with that.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to amend the amendment. Line 6, after the word any, delete the rest of the line. And line 7, delete the line entirely. Again, to repeat, after any on line 6, delete the rest of the line, and then delete all of line 7. So the amendment would read, any proceeds from the disposal of any state-owned project assets shall be separately accounted for and credited to the state general fund upon receipt. And if I have a second, I'd be happy to explain it.
There are several seconds, Mr. Speaker. Please proceed.
Thank you. I think the language that I'm seeking to strike is too restrictive and is something that ought to be negotiated, because there will obviously be, in my mind, be revenue generated. Hopefully there will be revenue generated, and it should not be exclusively credited to the state general fund upon receipt, because I don't think we've thought that through. But I do believe that we should direct any proceeds from the disposal of any state-owned assets right into the general fund.
Anyone for their first time on the amendment to the amendment? Any further discussion? Question being? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a an improvement and a friendly amendment, and I'd urge your support of it.
Representative Carson.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would wonder if existing programs, maybe through university, that may make a profit off a patent or something related to this, do we not want some of those to maybe roll back into the university instead of come back through the state? Just a question.
Anyone else for their first time on the amendment to the amendment? For their second time? First time, if we're still on first time. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure I understand that question. I think what the amendment does is addresses the issue that was just raised by saying that that's not automatically deposited or accounted for and credited to the general fund, because there will be negotiations, I'm sure, on intellectual property issues. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, did I speak?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I wondered if I spoke out of order, but I hope that answers the question. I think it gives the flexibility between the institution and the state to negotiate those things without, but with the language as it is, there is no flexibility.
We're voting on the amendment to amendment, third reading amendment number 17, as amended. Third reading amendment number 17 would read, beginning on line 6, any, then skip to line 8. So it would read, any proceeds from the disposal of any state-owned project assets shall be separately accounted for and credited to the state general fund upon receipt. All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment to the amendment is passed. We're back on third reading amendment 17 as amended. Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? Do I hear the question? Question being called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 17 as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 17 as amended has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 32 to House Bill 1. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's the corrected copy, which now has me as the sponsor of this amendment. This is a kind of a cleanup amendment for our dynamic compaction issue with the tree streets in Rock Springs. One of the things that the first amendment that you favorably considered the other night was we didn't say when it was going to be effective. This says it's going to be effective immediately, which is what we want so that we can proceed with this as quickly as possible. Clarifies a lot of the language and just tightens it up. So I consider it very friendly and would urge your favorable consideration of amendment number 32. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the good representative of the Tree Street folks saying that. It does really clear up what was a significant issue on the second reading amendment that I didn't realize until this morning, and I appreciate the acknowledgement of that. This is a good amendment and satisfies, I think, all the parties involved. This is litigation that we're somehow in the middle of. However, I know that the when you're dropping a multi-ton thing, smashing the ground, we can stand up and be accountable.
Anyone else for the first time? Question being called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 32 to House Bill 1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment 32 to House Bill 1 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 29, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 28 to House Bill 1. And this is a continuation of the conversation we've been having on the university's statewide video conferencing. Oh, excuse me. Thank you for the correction. Pardon me. I would much rather have started with 28, I'm sorry to say. Okay.
And Chairman Berger, would you please be sure you move that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 29 to House Bill 1. Again, it's still a continuation on the discussion with the university and Department of Education in regards to long-distance education. In second reading, we deleted the funding for this project of $3 million. My amendment proposes that we add back in $2.5 million, and that we make certain that we have a competitive sealed bidding process. This has been a project that has been in the works with a task force with several different educators and the folks that use these services, and I think it's an important project for long-distance learning, and I would propose that we vote aye on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I urge the body once again to defeat this amendment and not put Section 327 back into the budget. I did hand you out a letter from the Niobrara County School District expressing some concern about this whole process. And it's not about the money. It's about the policy and about what we're doing here with putting Section 327 in the budget bill. This is a bill that establishes a whole new center for distance learning and technology at the University of Wyoming that was vetted only by a task force created on the second floor of this building. It was never brought back to the Community College Task Force. It was never discussed with the Education Committee. The only legislators that had any input into this decision at all was the Joint Appropriations Committee. And I just think this sets a terrible precedent for this body to go down this road and create a council and create a center for distance learning and technology before it's had any public review and before it's had any input from this legislative body as a whole. So it's not about the money. It's not about reducing the money or trying to put more checks and balances on how the money's spent. It's about putting into place a brand new center, a whole brand new policy and a way of doing business in the state of Wyoming for distance education that was really vetted only through one committee, and that was the Joint Appropriations Committee. So I urge this body, this is not anything that is imminent. It's not anything that cannot wait one more year and be looked at during the interim. And I just urge the body to defeat the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to echo, and I'm not going to echo because I'm sure you've all listened intently to what our good majority floor leader or whip had to say. But the process that we intended to follow was this task force would be formed. This task force would bring back to either the task force, the Community College Task Force, which held its last meeting, I believe it was in October or November, or the Joint Education Committee, where all of this could be vetted and put together. I will tell you that I have been approached by some of the various people in this involved in this, and they're not all in agreement that this should be handled through the University of Wyoming. They actually have one of the smallest parts of distance education in Wyoming. And we, it was the intention that we bring this back. We have public hearings on it. We try and get everybody in agreement on these things. And as far as I know, this hasn't happened. So I stand in opposed to this amendment.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe everyone has a handout that the good chairman of appropriations delivered to everyone in your, it should look something like this. And in it, it details the people involved as this was developed. I know that all of us through emails and through written correspondence were given the full report or places where we could access it. Those are our responsibilities as members of this legislature when an issue of this magnitude comes forth that we have to read it ourselves. If you're interested in distance education in Wyoming and you realize in many respects how our independence from one another is not a service to the people of this state, many of whom would like to get more education, but they are limited only by the place that they live. And distance education, as you all know, is the future of our very, very rural state. So the choices before you are we can wait another year while the legislature studies the material that was already mailed to us earlier this year and have our hearings, or we can go along with the proposal as it's been put forward to us, which, in fact, the people who participated in it felt that they were saving the state money. The primary reasons for putting it at the university is they already have the infrastructure there. They have the experienced staff that has been running it, and they thought it would save money to have it at that institution because they already have the infrastructure and the personnel. In fact, the person who will be heading this up has been the dean of the Outreach College for a number of years, previously served as the dean of UW at Casper College, and has vast experience and the personal qualities that can make this a success. I would never ask this institution to abdicate our responsibilities for developing good programs. But if you think it's in the interest for us to wait another year just so that we can also read the reports that have been available, when in fact good compromises have been struck with the stakeholders in the process, then that would be the choice, and you would defeat the amendment before you. But if you're ready to move forward and know that in another year we'll be back, and in the interim we can make it an interim topic of the appropriate committee so that they are full participants and feel like they are fully informed with those public hearings, which they didn't attend from this other group. Personally, I'm going to vote for it because I'm ready to move forward. It's the people of this state that miss the opportunity by not having that availability as soon as possible of a coordinated, effective distance education system.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let nobody think that this is not important. What we did yesterday to delete this piece is this is not the proper place for it in the budget. We are taking liberties with the budget. We are putting bills into the budget. We are doing a lot of things with the budget that we shouldn't be doing. This is a piece of legislation that should have come as legislation so that we could have hearings on it, discuss it, listen to people from the university, and do all kinds of things. That's what we do with bills. We should not put it in the budget. This is a reasonably good piece of legislation, but it's the wrong place.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, I couldn't echo the words of the previous speaker any stronger than he already has. This is the wrong place for it. As for someone who did read the reports, I stand in opposition to this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a fledgling K-12 distance education program in this state. It's getting off to a pretty good start, but it's just barely beginning. And the people who were most directly involved with that whole enterprise were not at this table. They were not included in these discussions. They're not included on the list of people who would be part of this whole project. This, if it goes forward, I think this is in direct opposition of local control. This is an attempt to centralize distance education that really needs some creative competition and some free enterprise vigor to really be all that it could be.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am in support of this amendment. I did support deleting the section as we did on second reading. This amendment represents a compromise among competing interests and addressed many of my concerns, so I would urge the body to vote in favor of it.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, on and for the amendment. You can argue on many Section 300s whether it should be in the budget or shouldn't be in the budget. And if you don't like something, you argue that it shouldn't be in the budget and it should be a separate bill. And if you do like it, you argue the other way. Okay? It does not mean that we don't know what we're doing. It means we're advocating in a manner that's allowed under the Section 300s, and you can argue the merits of the issue, and you can argue the process, but I don't believe the process is violating our rules. So what are the merits? I spoke about it on second reading in favor or against the amendment to strip it out. I still believe that this institution where we're wanting to center this is the logical and reasonable place to do it, and now is the time to do it. It is the best institution. I challenge somebody to tell me what other place do we do this better. No one has come to me and said, this is where. So if there is no other place, why not this place and why not now?
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Harsman.
In the testimony we had in appropriations, again, it's a phenomenal amount of money we're spending statewide. Everybody going in different directions. So we try to kind of use our resources more efficiently, our limited resources. And I'm all for competition, creative thinking. But, I mean, how far do we promote that with inefficiencies between competing state and local governments, and really that's all state money. And so at some point, these kind of mirror the work we're doing with all of our technology throughout the state. The CIO has done that. We're trying to bring all this in, and there's just people that don't want to let go of their little piece of the kingdom. And this is the right thing to do. And I think this good speaker, some of the best things we've ever done in the legislature have happened in the budget bill. So don't go there. I mean, it's our crack for all 60 of us to craft legislation. That's what we're here for. And some of the best things we've ever done have come in House Bill 1. So keep up the good work, and I urge your amendment, adoption of this amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is clearly a policy decision that you're going to be making here today, because this is setting up centralized distance education statewide in a Section 300 in the Joint Appropriations Committee bill. And this piece of legislation has never been seen by any other legislative committee, not the Community College Task Force, not the Education Committee. In fact, this particular section was not even an exception request in the university's original budget that went to the governor. It was added after it was turned in. So I think we need to take a step back. I've seen no compelling reason why we need to move forward at this particular point in time, right now, why this cannot wait another year. So on and against the amendment.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Chairman Berger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the discussion. I think it's critical because many of you had expressed that you had not had enough time to know more about this project on long-distance learning. And that's certainly true that it was not in the governor's proposed budget. He did indicate a desire for that in his opening remarks of the budget. But secondly, the report that came from the task force did not come out until the early part of December when we got a brief discussion on that. So we as a JAC committee have been learning, too, as we've progressed along with the information on this. I just think it's a high priority. I come from a background of coordinating, and I was truly frustrated by these services being available around the state but not having it truly coordinated for those who need it in those rural areas. And so I thought by bringing this amendment forward, it shows some safeguards in there as to slowing down the process so that there is involvement, the money isn't going out immediately, and I trust that we will be much better informed as we move forward with what I think is a innovative policy choice. Thank you, and I ask you to vote aye.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 29 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt, all those in favor, please stand. Third reading amendment number 29 is passed. Representative Millen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sensing this might be a good time to ask for privilege of the floor.
Representative Millen, we need a roll call vote first, so I've tried to weave you in a little. This does increase the budget, puts money back in that was taken out, so it requires a roll call vote. The clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore. Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
No.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Kimball.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Miller.
No.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton. Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Philp excused. Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Peters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 35 aye, 23 no, 2 excused.
Third reading amendment number 29 has passed. Representative Millen, could you provide us with a break here?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some people that I would like to introduce to you. There are several people with the General Federation of Women's Clubs here, our own Cheyenne Women's Civic League. With several of the people that work here are in this organization. Our president in Cheyenne is Ann Norwood, and one of my best friends, Shree Reckling, is in the group, and her daughter, Iva, is one of the juniorettes, and she's got some other juniorettes there. So please welcome the group here.
Welcome to the House. And ladies and gentlemen, maybe while we're taking a break, maybe I take a little privilege myself. Over here we have the city manager of the city of Laramie, and I think hiding behind the Janine Jordan, and I think is the mayor there. Okay, Janine, would you stand, please, and be recognized? The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment to House Bill 1. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 28 to House Bill 1, and this is a continuation of second reading amendments to statewide video conferencing. And it was important to me that we were going to expend up to $1 million that we make certain that there was a competitive sealed bidding process in place. And that's what this amendment would do. If there are no questions, I would call for the question.
Anyone for the first time? We're voting on third reading amendment number 28 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 28 has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 11 to House Bill 1. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman. I'm going to withdraw third reading amendment number 11 to House Bill 1. It had to do with having a good old rant about the Wyoming Pipeline Authority and the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority and the fact that all the loans had been forgiven and so on. And I think there's action to build more accountability, and this is not to say anything disparaging about the people who have worked in those organizations, because they go to work every morning trying to do the best jobs they can from Wyoming. But I was just going to seriously question their role in government and whether or not we should continue to support that. But I will spare the body and withdraw that amendment.
Third reading amendment number 11 to House Bill 1 has been withdrawn. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 9. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 1. There is a copy of a handout to you that's addressed 3009 with representative from Bighorn's name on it, House District 51. And we don't like bringing this amendment to the body, but it just happens to happen up in our neck of the woods. And what happened is in 2004, this school district went through all the steps with the School Facilities Commission, and they had a lengthy process of approval of their school plan, and we're going to do this in phases, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They went to the county commissioners, and the county commissioner says, okay, we'll give you parking variances for this, and they leased land across there to stage all the construction and all that, and they went to work, and they have built, or they are in the process right now of building a new high school at the campus in Bighorn. It's going to be a wonderful facility. Then the School Facilities Commission came back and said, well, we aren't going to go through with the rest of it. We aren't going to tear down the old high school. We aren't going to rebuild, essentially, a new grade school. We're just going to quit right here, and you guys are going to have to live with this. Well, there's no places to turn around buses. The students going to the high school are going to have to park along Highway 335 in front of the school. There's no walkways out there. The old grade school is so close to the high school that there's fire problems there, and they're saying, well, we could build a wall between the two, and we might have to brick up some of the windows. And it just kind of goes from horror story to horror story. So what this amendment does is basically it says, finish the job that's been started. Let's go ahead and do the next phases of the construction as was in the original plan. So it proposes to use $3 million and that's rollover money within the account, and add it to $5 million, which was an actual amount saved from the construction of the high school that won't be required to go ahead and finish the facility for School District 1 at Bighorn. And we don't view this as stepping in front of the line or anything. It was already approved, but then it got pulled back. And there's a lot of community expectations involved here. And we think that this is probably just the best way to go ahead and basically finish the job that's been started. So I ask for your approval of this amendment.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate my counterpart for bringing this amendment. I've worked on this little school was what helped me learn more about the School Facilities Commission because, you know, if you're not on the select committee, and if you don't have kids going to a school, you don't have a lot of focus on some of the projects that are going about. The other thing I would say about this is that our campus in the little town of Bighorn is our community. And they made a lot of sacrifices and made a lot of choices in order to do this. And they didn't want to change that priority list or jump out of line. But if you could only see the mess, it's amazing. And so through that process, I took this on to learn more about the School Facilities Commission and how the process works, the priority list, get to know the people that are on SFC. And I appreciate the good work of all those folks. And then we've spent a lot of time in JAC on SFC, and you saw some of the amendments that I brought on second reading. But I think what's more important is that I was just reminded about is it's the Code of the West. Do what has to be done. Thank you.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It breaks my heart to have to stand up in opposition to this amendment. But I can tell you people from 4 years of experience and fighting about these things and over and under and in discussion that this is not the way we should build schools in Wyoming. I came forward with an amendment when I was a freshman legislator with a situation very similar to this and got partially through the process with it, which was pretty amazing. And basically what happens is when we start cherry-picking and going away from this process, even though it's a bad process, it's a process that has huge shortcomings and great failures. Once we get away from that, we're going to spend every day, all session long, fighting over who's going to get their school. And I just don't want to go there. I sponsored the amendment with the good chairman of the Appropriations Committee to take a look at the way we're building schools and the way we prioritize them. And we both agree that there's a problem with the way the system is working now. This is not the answer to that problem, though. This makes the problem more political and more complicated. And, you know, I would love to have my school in Lingle built. It's full of asbestos. We're still carrying kids with that are in wheelchairs to the second floor. There's a lot of us that have needs. There are a lot of problems out there. But I sympathize and I empathize and, like I say, it breaks my heart to stand up against this because I tried to do the same thing. But I can tell you, it's not the way to go about it. On and against the amendment.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I find myself in a unique position of listening to the former speaker, and I'm empathetic to what he said. That the difference, however, is who started the politics. If you think that the school started the politics, you better take another look at the history of it and the hand up that was there. The school didn't put itself in that position. The school found itself to be the victim of a change of the commission. And by virtue of that change, they then find themselves in the position of having a construction project that has started and not the funds to complete it. So the only reason that my name isn't on the bottom of this as being supporting it is because I wasn't asked. I urge your support.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to this. I went to a town hall meeting in the little town of Dubois in my district about a month before coming down here, and it was full. It was the whole town was there, and they're pretty ticked off because they, too, started a project, and they were pretty far into it, and suddenly we changed the formula around and told them, nope, you're no longer on the list, even though the school's falling down around their ears. But because of capacity, because they're losing population, not because of the building. Everyone agrees the building's falling down and there's earthquake problems and they got steel propping up the walls. But because of capacity, people, there are not as many people in Dubois as other places. So Dubois has fallen off the list. And I had to explain to those people, listen, we're all playing by the same game. We're all going to play fair, and you're going to have to follow the list. I know they started this. And their point was, but wait a minute, we were well into the process. We'd already spent money. We'd already done a lot, just as the good gentleman talked earlier from the eastern side of the state. His school got caught up in the same thing. I think we're talking about the same exact thing here. I wish I had known we could bring these. I kept telling everybody, nope, everybody's telling me we got to play fair. We got to play by this list that I totally disagree with, formula that I totally disagree with. A good gentleman from the eastern side of the state brought a proposal a few years ago to change that formula. It's just not a fair system. But I told my people they had to wait. I think everyone else has to wait. And you got to play the game like everyone else is playing it. Otherwise, we should all just bring a bill and see who can outvote each other and get their school onto the list. That's why we all have agreed to follow this formula and do it that way. I'd urge you to vote no.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the heart of the matter here is what dollars are we talking about? And I can assure you, I've been in some meetings in JAC where there has been much confusion about following the money, the $1.5 billion we've spent for CAPCON in the last 6 years or so. And what we would call reversions, what has been rolled over or carried forward or what we're holding as encumbered or unencumbered. And this is somewhat, I referred to you the other day, is how a lot of us are just not talking the same language. And the last spreadsheet I got, I'm not sure if I see these dollars profiled in that, and I think my concern is, and this goes to the confusion that I've been referring to, is we have to be careful not to encumber some of these reversion funds twice. And I can tell you, at the way I read this right now, I just can't answer that question sufficiently enough to vote for this. Not that I would not support spending some money on this great need for this school, but I would, I guess a question, I would need some certainty that we're not appropriating encumbered dollars, number one, and then again, are any of these dollars new? And you talk about some new and some on top of another. And I clearly need some more specificity and clarity as far as that regard. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking against the amendment, as much as I hate to, and also I agree with the good representative from District 5. A few years back, we had that situation that he was referring to about bringing a school, bringing their construction aids directly to the legislature. And we had received testimony from many of the good citizens of that area, but we had received one piece of testimony from one of our good senators. And he said to us, he says, when you get into this situation of the legislature making the decision about whose school is going to get what, whose school is going to get built. He said, small schools always lose. That's what he said. So when we get back to that politics of deciding who's going to, whose school is going to get built, small schools tend to be on the short end of the stick. So let's stay with the rules that we've established.
Representative Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just a little history, and I, this is the way I see the money. And then the $3 million, it would be new money. The 3.6 would come out of the school foundation. School Capcom accounts are linked now from legislation last year. The $5 million that's explained in this deal, I understand, would be a reversion from the high school project. That I understand that they have not moved into that building yet, so that money is will sit there for like 11 months before the warranty and all the checkoff lists are done, and then the money is freed up. Now, a year ago, and this was our frustration with this process, I got to be careful of the choice of words I say, but this deal might have been taken care of and nobody would have ever known it. And I think that's still going on right now before, because we really have no control. The commission is still allows the leadership to just kind of move and flex money. That's still going on right now. We haven't changed that, and it won't change until this budget bill passes. And so that's going on today. It went on $3 million last week, I heard about. And there's, that's the way we've set this up. So I will tell you, the process, I think, is starting to work, because at least this is a deal that comes before us that might have been $5, $8, $3 million that nobody would even on this floor would have known about, except for the few that represent that district. So I think the process is working there. The only thing that would give me just a little bit of comfort is that we have in there that there's going to be a public hearing. That's already in the budget. And we have in there that there's going to be reorganization. The commission is going to be advisors now, the governor, and the staff is governor's employees now, like any other agency. So there's more accountability to the executive branch. And this requires the governor, after consulting all these public hearings, to actually release the money. That's the only thing. I would just tell you, though, it's a tough deal to get up and argue for your one school. And I empathize with you, and I the state has made mistakes here. There's no doubt about it. But I think, in my judgment, the school district has not been totally without some issues on this, too. Part of the deal is the high school's built too big. They had a projected enrollment going up. Their enrollment's gone down, so they built a high school that's too large. And so part of the talk is, well, maybe we move fifth, sixth graders, seventh, eighth into that building. Maybe it's a K through four. I don't know what the solution will be. They're talking about it. Something will happen here, whether it happens this funding cycle or the next. But I really empathize, and I have a... But this is a tough deal, man. I know we've gone through this before, I guess. So do what you wish with it, I guess. But I'm going to probably have to oppose it. And I know that in the end, this will probably cost the taxpayers more money because they're going to demobilize off the site. They're going to have to do some things, and then they'll have to come back and mobilize. It'll probably cost us 5% more. So you got to work all those things out in your mind. And the state was wrong in putting them on this site, first of all, I believe. I mean, they're in a too small of a site. They had to build this massive retaining wall to try to make the site better. They're the only school district with their own sewage treatment facility because they can't. It's just a mess. And it's been a mess from day one. And, you know, at some point we're going to make it right. So, you kind of think about all those things when you cast your vote. And I'm just trying to give you information on the deal. But I do, the only thing that gives me just a wee bit of comfort is that there's going to be a public hearing and the governor has to okay these funds. Because that's not going on today right now. It's money's moving all over. So, thank you. I hope I added a little bit to the knowledge on this.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just like to say, last year we had this conversation with the director, and in JEC we have this discussion with the director, and the director said we will follow the rules. This isn't following the rules, and however, you know, there's all kinds of situations, as we've heard, but the director kept telling us this is what we're going to do, and I think we got to stick with it. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? For their first time. Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like my good fellow legislator from Sharon County said, this is not an easy thing for us to bring to you, but it shed a lot of light on what we're doing. When we're spending gazillions of dollars on new school buildings and we find out, in my view, how dysfunctional things are and when folks do play by the rules, I actually have a thesis on the timeline of this project from 2004 to date. And if you get past page 2 and don't get angry, you're amazing. What I found with this, and that's what I told my district, I said, you know, I can't bring this type of legislation because there are rules. And that's why we have the SFC. But when you're into construction and you've spent over $10 million of the people's money and you have a conditional use permit that says unless you have finished the parking lot, demolished an old elementary school so that you can turn around and have the proper space for the student population and not possibly get an occupancy permission on a brand new school, what kind of a return on your investment is that? And then the other thing was, spend a minimum of $500,000 to demobilize the construction crew that we've been paying a lease payment on for 18 months to be there and not finish it. I know that this is an issue that I did not want to bring, and I know you have concerns, and I do hope that we will create a much more effective commission and policy as we move forward. And certainly, I can see the heartburn. So thank you for considering.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You don't know how hard it is for us to stand up here because I can't agree more with the good representative from Fort Laramie and the good representative from Fort Washakie. Because that's why we set up the school commission, because what a wrangle it would be if we were all in here scrapping to get a building in our school district. That would be totally dysfunctional. Addressing the rules one minute. You know, whenever I have a neighbor across the way from me, he worked in the schools for years and years, and he said, you know, we set all these rules, and then invariably there's some kid that does something that you just wish you didn't have those rules, because it's just not fair to set them in that situation. And I think that's what we have here. We have a situation where the school district made an error. Their projections on population wasn't right. But what the School Facilities Commission has done, this five-page report that the good representative from Bighorn was telling about, that goes through all this history of, okay, this is the plan. Oh, no, now this isn't the plan. This you have to do something else. What a way to disappoint people in a community when you get expectations by the contractors, by the community, to all do one thing, and then you just wipe those out. This school district is so tight with families that they don't have separate busing, that kindergarten through high school ride on the same bus. And to put so much uncertainty with a project that was, if we were trying to step in line, then I would say we were very out of line. But what we're trying to do is just finish a project that had started, and I guess maybe it's one of those cowboy ethics. We just want to finish the job. And so I'd urge you to consider a favorable consideration of this amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment fails. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. Third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 1 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 30. Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This particular one has to do with the language for the composition and the directives for the School Finance Recalibration Committee. As you may recall, on the second reading, there was a budget amendment brought from my good friend who believes that his county is number one in all of our hearts. And so when that day's session ended, he asked that a number of us who had been debating it would get together and try to come up with a compromise between the existing language and the language he was trying to propose. So what you see before you is the result of many people trying to work together. And so what I would like to do is suggest that one of the other co-sponsors explain the reasoning behind it.
Representative Hammonds, would you move the amendment, please?
Yes, I would move amendment number 30. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This isn't a dramatic change in the way it the outcome is expected to be, but I think that what we have done among the three of us is put together some ideas that I think will strengthen the framework that this recalibration committee would benefit from. And what it does, the simplest way to explain it is that it makes the maximum use of the last 5 or 6 years' experience with the present calibration system and the present model that we have now. And the particular language I'd like to highlight that is, to me, it's very important. It says that lines 6 and 7, or 5, yeah, 6, 7, broad participation of all stakeholders, Department of Education, school districts, school data advisory committee. You know, there was nothing in the previous or in the existing original wording that would prevent that, but this adds some direct specifics about getting input from stakeholders. The other thing, if you go down under Romanet I, what we're emphasizing here is that we're looking at the components of the model with respect to past proven effectiveness. What has happened, and use that information to form the next model to see what's working and what isn't, and what's effective and what isn't. Then you go down to Romanet number 4. We've got to be able to determine the cost of the components, just the basic components, not in a micro sense so much, but more in a macro sense, and use the cost as an input into the formation of the components of the new model. And then another one I think was very important to add was specific language under Romanet 6 that makes it their responsibility to take a look at the method of assessment of achievement of students. And you know, I just think that that's something that if you're not going to do it at a calibration interval, I think you're really missing the boat. I don't expect a full you know, they would do a full analysis on it from the ground up, but they should look at it to see if it's measuring achievement the way we intended it to. So that's, you know, that's the skin I've got in it. I just looked at the original wording, and it looked like it was so general that we might end up with a kind of a same old thing, and there was nothing in there that would really engineer an examination of past experience. So that's the reasoning behind it. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the good work that and the good discussion that we've just had. But, Mr. Chairman, the language that's in this budget amendment, some of it was brought up. You know, we all received a memorandum from the downstairs. And that information and information from the various people on the Appropriations Committee, we asked, I know I asked some of the people that are very good with words and thought processes to work on drafting what's here, what you see before you in the budget bill on page 114. And this, all of the things that are here, I see in here, maybe worded just a little bit differently. So I would think that, you know, we could go ahead and change this if the body so desires, but there was a lot of thought went into what's in here already. And I just would really ask the body to resist this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Representative Madden.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I agree that, there's a lot of thought that went in the original language. But I still maintain that it wasn't specific enough so that you would be expecting to get the kind of information you need based on historical evidence. And, I think that's really what we had lacked in the present model, is that we didn't have a base of experience that we could rely on. And now we've got a bunch of experience. We've got some data, and we've got some assessment of what's working and what isn't working, and I just think if you got it, why not use it? And if we don't, we're probably not going to end up with anything much different than what we've had before. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 30 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Division being called for. All those in favor signify by or stand up. Please rise. Do something.
Holy smokes.
Third reading amendment number 30 to House Bill 1 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 4, Representative Dirks.
Mr. Chairman, I move third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 1. Mr. Chairman, many of the issues contained in an amendment like this have been discussed in second reading and even earlier today. This amendment would take $10 million from the general fund and put it into the distribution formula to our local governments. Some of the numbers at the bottom of the first page may be a bit inaccurate. You see at the bottom it says excess over required reserve. I've been told we're probably, if this would pass, it would be more like 18, well, we're right now at 18 million. And so if this would pass, it would leave it roughly 8 million left. And that's information from the Goldenrod. It seems we all experience some kind of learning curve as we come down here. And most certainly the one of the more steep learning curves that I've experienced deals with local governments and the kinds of things that they go through. I don't have to tell that to some of you. You have come from the local governments to this body, and I think whenever that happens, that is a good deal. Because there's no way that those of us who work in other professions know the kinds of things that local governments have to deal with. Not only from what we might hand them, but sometimes federal regulations take a big leap over us to the local governments, and they have to deal with some things that not even we would contemplate. Because so many members of this body probably already have a pretty good idea of how they feel about this, just let me opine a little bit on why I am so fervent about our local governments. A lot of it has to do with two things, history and immediacy. As far as history, it's been mentioned before that somewhere early in late 1999, 2000, when the decision was made on the de-earmarking, some of us were here at that time. They were tense discussions. There were some decisions made as to which of these funding streams we would pick to de-earmark the more severely, and most of the severe cuts did come in with local governments. I believe that had some repercussions in the 2002 election. And I think if you look back at that, you can see that what this body did collectively with de-earmarking definitely had an effect. And that's because the people who work in these local governments most closely to the people felt that. A few years later, we, in a rather seemingly magnanimous approach, took the sales tax off food. Well, that left us in many ways looking like heroes, but we didn't, from the local government point of view, they can't really count on to what degree we're going to backfill that. And so if you can see that this amendment pretty much takes the funding back to what it was in 2005 and 6. And the locals are aware that the 2007, 2008, 2009, 10 were perhaps inflated. They understand that. They understand we had more money then. It's not like they're going to always expect every year that we would dish out excess revenue. And this is at a time when we don't have much on the table to send out. Why do we need to send this out? Well, we've heard in our meetings from our locals, we've heard the specifics, and that brings me to the second part of immediacy. There's something about being on a city council or a county commission. One's decisions are so immediate. We can sort of deflect that a little bit, and we, even though we may not want to go to a grocery store or a post office after our sessions, we don't experience what the city council members or county commissions do the very next day when they make a decision. And many, many things that will come to them over the year that we have no way of anticipating. And I mentioned this before, some of the federal regulations or even things that will come up within the community. And you know they're all very different. And so because of history and immediacy in what does the local governments have to expect from us, I bring this amendment and welcome the debate.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the immediacy argument a little bit, but there's also another argument I think we have to at least raise, and that is that we don't know how valuable that $10 million might be to us or to local governments a year from now. There's not real good news about state sales tax receipts right now. If we're wrong and we find out that there are plenty of funds, we have an interim budget that we'll have a year from now, and we can look at that. Now, as far as how bad local governments are being hurt by this, all this money is for special purchases. I mean, it's one-time purchases,
and things like that. If they need a new fire truck or whatever these one-time purchases are, we're just asking, let's hold off and take a look at just how that $10 million looks a year from now and do it then. I just think that's the more responsible way to do that. We're almost to the point where we're putting money in the budget that we can't be sure that we have. Thank you.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And I think we need to be conscious of the fact that 6 months after this budget goes into effect, the legislature will be in session again. If the local governments can spend that $10 million in that 6 months, perhaps they should wait. And historically, they'll be back with a supplemental budget. You can bet on that. We'll take care of them. Nobody in this legislature, I don't think, has been more supportive of local governments than I have through the years. And I want to say that we did put a cap on that. Local governments didn't suffer from that cap. In fact, we appropriated more money than they would have had if we hadn't put the caps on through those years. It was Select Water and some of the highways and things like that didn't get the, well, highways got a supplemental budget, but the water accounts didn't get any. They did get some additional put in a repayment that was taken out. But I think the real argument on this is, let's wait. You got a supplemental budget coming. Local governments will be here asking for money. You'll have some available for them. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman McComey.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, you've heard me talk about this, I guess, on the floor the last time we did the budget. And we have handing these local governments an unfunded mandate. We've taken money and we've put it aside for the school districts. We've taken money and we put it aside for the state to match the increase to the retirement system. We have not done that for our local government. And I think it's only fair that we look at this. And as far as coming back here on the later, this, ladies and gentlemen, is... These cities and counties have to take this money and say, okay, this is what we're going to receive for 2 years, and they have to take this down and try and get by with it without this. And yes, we told them that we'd, you know, when we took the sales tax off food, included in that bill was some money that would go to appropriations, and appropriations would make up that difference. And all of that kind of got lost in these huge amounts that all of a sudden we start giving them as when things got good. But now, when things are tough, if you've looked at this handout from the good representative from Lusk, it's a pretty good handout. The front page of it explains pretty good where we are and what we've done. And where all we're doing is trying to bring them back to where they were in 2005, 2006. These are the people that serve the people of Wyoming. We don't do that here. These are the people that provide water, the sewer, the police, the fire protection, the libraries, the county roads, the sheriffs, these types of things. So on and for the amendment, ladies and gentlemen.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you consider this, I think that it's time for us all to step back and reflect on what we have done. We came here committed not to touch savings, and we have successfully done that. No one has even brought an amendment that we would go to the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. We have committed together that is what we wanted to leave untouched. There has been debate about what we would do with the spending policy reserve account, but we have ended up at the end of the day We have not touched that, except for the part that the JAC had already done previously with the spillover amount of $20 million. And so we end up now, at the end of the day, on your goldenrod, where? How much money do we have left over from general funds? Not savings, but from general funds. And from today's goldenrod, we still have $18 million on the table. Now, the budget amendment before you does not advocate using all $18 million. It says let's use $10 million, not of savings, but of general fund monies. Now, if we defeat this amendment, we go home and we can say to our constituents, not only did we not touch savings, we left money on the table. Now, some of you may think, well, that's okay with me to leave some money on the table. But guess what? If you look at your goldenrod, it is built into our statutes that we leave a budget reserve amount of $93 million that we haven't even talked about. We automatically leave that $93 million when we build our budget. So the $18 million of unappropriated general fund money is an addition to the $93 that we don't even talk about. So I, for one, would like to have that money of $10 million of unappropriated general fund money go to all of our communities and all of our counties for their one-time capital needs. Remember that this money is divided into two, half of it for 1 year and half for the other biennium. So in that essence, what you're looking at is an extra $5 million sprinkled all over all of the local government entities for 2011 and another $5 million for 2012. I think it's a reasonable approach, one that everyone who's conservative and fiscally responsible, but also responsive to our local government's needs, can say, yes, I voted aye on this particular amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? For the second time before the sponsor, Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's talk about splitting it up into 2 years. That'd be, what, an extra $5 million among all the cities and counties per year. It works out to be about $12 for every man, woman, and child. Is that going to make a difference? I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it's not anything earth-shaking, but we need to consider that $10 million just may be needed sometime in the future. And, you know, it's not appropriate to say we're leaving money on the table. To me, money that's not appropriated that's available is savings. If you don't spend the money, it's saved money. It can't be a purgatory in there where it's a little bit of each or it's a money on the table. This is real money we're talking about, and I think we have to reckon that. Thank you.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Representative Dirks.
Mr. Chairman, I know we've heard on several bills the argument that this body will be back in session 6 months after the July 1st date. It's not been my experience that the expenditures happen that quickly. I know sometimes we make bills active immediately, but I don't remember a large expenditure ever being made that immediately. So we are really talking about a full year between the time, and I would urge passage of this. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has passed. It involves an increase in funding. A roll call vote is required. The clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey. Flickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd. Kennedy.
Aye.
Kennedy. Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen. Kimball.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp excused. Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters. Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 45 aye, 13 no, 2 excused.
Third reading amendment number 4 has passed the House. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 6. Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 6 and ask for your favorable consideration. I passed out way early this morning in another lifetime a chicken scratching that was a primer on local government finance. It's a cartoon picture that has my name on the upper left-hand corner. What it talks about is how we fund cities, towns, and counties. 89% of our direct distributions are distributed two-thirds to cities and towns and one-third to counties. Then we have a revenue-challenged method of our distribution, which is comprised of 11% of our distributions to cities and towns, and that's distributed 50% to cities and 50% to counties. What this amendment does is it takes the funding of cities and towns back to the level it was percentage-wise in the last biennium. If you look at the crazy mathematical formula, it says cities and towns funding, and you take two-thirds of 89%, that adds up to 59.33%, and one-half of 11% is 5.5%, equals 64.83%. The counties get one-third of 89%, and one-half of 11% for 35.7%. What this amendment does, the net effect of it, and you can look on the next spreadsheet that's entitled Lubnow-Blickery Amendment, is it readjusts that formula by upping the percentage received in the direct distributions from cities and towns from two-thirds to 69% and lowering the percentage that counties receive from 33% to 30%. The ultimate result is that cities get 67.6% and counties get 32.4%, which is what we funded them in the biennium. Prior to the last amendment, the net effect would be a $1.1 million shift from counties to cities and towns. After the last amendment, it's a $1.46 million shift from counties to cities and towns. If you look on the spreadsheet that says Lubnow-Blickery Amendment, it shows the effect. All of the cities and towns are winners. All of the counties are losers, to the degree that's set forth in that spreadsheet. I'd urge your positive consideration to moving this back to the way that they were funded last biennium. Thank you.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not speaking on or against the amendment at this time, but I just like for a point of clarification, we've heard that this is the way it was before, and I would like to hear from the good chairman of appropriations if maybe she could come to the mic. And the one-third, two-thirds principle has been there, and we had the 11% in the last biennium. So if you could just maybe shed some light on that from your perspective.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think if everyone would just pull out your long horizontal sheet that has Berger on it. There's been a lot of discussion about this, and
We asked our staff to go back to 2003 and 2004, and I hope that if you all have that sheet, should I wait a minute? That this does shed light on it, that in the last biennium, you know, the percentage was 67 and 32, but the previous one was 62 and 37. So just keep moving back, and you'll look at the averages, and that's basically what we have proposed here for 11 and 12. And the bottom line shows the hardship percent.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I urge your support for the amendment because what we do, we're reducing our allocations, our appropriations to our locals, but we're giving our cities really another 3% cut on what they had last biennium. And so I applaud the bringer of it. It's generally been a two-thirds, one-third, and you can see the percentages, but that's the things we've talked about. But again, this hits the cities extra hard this budget cycle. Not only is there a cut, but then they take another 3% cut off the last biennium. So I encourage your support. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Kimball.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen of the 60th, I've been listening and looking through all this stuff and regarding 11% hardship and 67% and two-thirds and one-third and why this person's hardship and why this person's not. I know you've all worked on this. I haven't. I'm just a simple person, and I just take a look at this, and before we pass the amendment prior to this, the area that I happen to represent was going to take a 47% cut. Now, I just take a look at that and think if I went home and somebody told me I was only going to get 53% of what I had the year before, I'd have a problem. And I do understand we are hurting for money. That's not the issue. I just really would like to take a look at this. If I get lucky enough to come back here again next term, I'm certainly going to ask some people as to how we arrived at this schedule. This hardship schedule does not look real fair to me, but I wasn't here when you came up with it, so that I can only go by that. When you do this, there's losers and winners. The minute we start doing this, there's going to be a lot of winners, and I think as the great representative from the farthest pot from me in the state mentioned, that the counties all lost and the cities all won. I don't know how you arrived at this, but I think because 68.5% of the people in this state are from the cities, that may be a starting point. I would urge your positive support for this.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to make heads and tails of this, and you know, I look at it at first glance, and I thought, maybe it affects the revenue-challenged monies. And when you look at the amendment, still 11% is going there, and it doesn't look like it changes that. But I'm having a hard time understanding the logic for some reason of changing the two-thirds, one-third out of the 89% direct distribution. It may be just me, but I'm not following this. So I just wanted to get up and ask my good friend from Campbell County to clarify it for me.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman Berger.
I just have to do this.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Are you on your first time,
I am.
Mr. Speaker? That's what I thought. For your first time, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I just have some questions and just wanted to lodge a first time so I can get a second time.
I'm now parliamentarily flummoxed.
Now we're starting on our second time.
Chairman Berger.
I just had to do this. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like you to resist this amendment.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Going once. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The net effect is to take about $1 million that would normally go to the counties under the way it is in the bill and redistribute it to the cities and towns. So we have the old formula of two-thirds, one-third. The revenue challenge dollars in the 50-50 split skew the two-thirds, one-third, as it is in the budget bill. And that then brings you to the argument that we aren't following the old two-thirds, one-third distribution. Well, that's right. That is true. Should then we be taking the money from the counties to give it to the cities? How does that affect the revenue challenged 11% that we decide to split 50-50? I mean, we're still splitting the two-thirds, one-third, or excuse me, the 89%, two-thirds, one-third. We've added $10 million to the direct flow that will go under this formula, as I understand it. Everyone will get more money, the cities and towns and the counties, of that $10 million. That's how I understand the effect of it. I don't know what it is with the extra dollars, that the $10 million that were added on. Will we always have to adjust to the two-thirds, one-third if we go with revenue challenged? And I don't know, maybe the sponsor can address that policy question. Because we already acknowledge that the distribution at two-thirds, one-third isn't fair. That's why we have the revenue challenged. So it's a circular argument that I'm still on the track, not quite sure where to stop.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have another question for the sponsor. So the way that I'm tracking this now is that the differentiation between diverting from the one-third, two-third will only occur in the revenue-challenged districts. Then where are you going to get the 11% that they're not getting to come up with the difference?
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
All right. Mr. Chairman, my question is going to be simple. So when we have on our spreadsheet the 64.83 and the 35.17%, then the only way that, because the budget bill says two-thirds and one-third, the only way that you're getting to these different percentages has got to be through taking something from the revenue-challenged cities, towns, and counties. And I'd kind of like to know what those numbers are and what it is. Well, clarify it, please.
Anyone else for their second time? I don't think there are any left. I think we're down to the sponsor.
You've had two.
Representative Harshman, have you had one or two?
I've had one.
For your second time.
Just vote aye. It's a great amendment. Thank you. Doesn't affect the hardship folks at all. And if we don't, we're reducing what we did percentage-wise in this current biennium. So the cities will take an additional 3% whack from the distribution model, and it'll go to the counties. It's my limited understanding. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lubnow.
Okay, do-over. Here. This does not affect revenue-challenged distributions at all. Pull out your budget bill. Look at page 116. This does not affect revenue-challenged budget distributions at all. That 11% is not affected at all. If you look at page 116, line 24 of your budget bill, it talks about the 89%. Under the budget bill, two-thirds of that 89% goes to cities and towns. One-third of that 89% goes to counties. So, because we have a 50-50 distribution under the revenue challenge stuff, it skews the numbers because counties get 50% under that revenue challenge distribution and cities get 50% under the revenue challenge distribution. So overall, the distribution is skewed a little bit. But the amendment does not affect the revenue challenge distribution at all. It's not touched. It's a sacred cow. What this does is it readjusts the distribution of the 89% so that 69.7% instead of two-thirds goes to 69.7% of the 89% goes to cities and towns, and 30% goes to counties. The effect is, after the last amendment, to take about $1.4 million from counties and reallocate that to cities. That doesn't take any money from revenue challenged and reallocate it to anybody else at all. The revenue challenge stays the same. It's a sacred cow. No one's touching it. What it does do is it reallocates the cities and towns formula under the direct distribution so that cities and towns get an extra higher percentage so that it works out to the same percentage that we paid them last time. Now, the good chairman is right, if you look at her sheet, that in the history we paid different percentages to cities and towns. But you'll also know that the distribution formula that we are now under wasn't adopted until the last biennium, the distribution formula that had hardship communities. Back before that, two bienniums ago, we had impacted communities distribution. We had all kinds of distributions. But the only time we've ever done it consistently under this formula is under this bill. So it's complicated, I know. This was a nice primer on local government distributions that some of us follow and some of us don't. I'd appreciate your positive consideration. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment passed. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. Third reading amendment number 6 has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 15. Representative Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, it's good we get to have this discussion. There's just been distributed a graph. I think we need to talk about this for a little bit and get a perspective. And this is from our LSO staff. The senators have it, and I thought we better have it so we are a little more informed of kind of what we've done. Now, the first graph, there is some graph, but that's a different issue. We'll talk about that when we. But the first graph shows assessed valuation in the bold line, and it's coming off the left graph, and you can see it spike. And you can see sales tax, which is coming off the right, on your right side, it's a skinny line. You know, and you saw where it spiked, up there at 800 million. You see the deep drop now, this sharp drop, okay? Next page. Page 2 is a colored graph, but it's in black and white. And it has selected counties. Well, the very bottom one's Cheyenne. And you can see since 2003, look at Cheyenne's sales tax. 10 million, 10, 10, 10, 11, 11, 11, 11, 11. For 2009, 10, 11, and 12 was projected 11 million. There, that flat bottom line looks like just a white straight line across the bottom. That's Cheyenne. And then look at the top one is Gillette. And you can see Gillette's sales taxes. They got just tremendous growth, 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 and then wham, a tremendous drop over 1 year, 25% drop. The next one under them is Casper. You can see the same drop. And so what you saw were these mineral-rich counties who had a lot of activity going on, really, really benefited from this energy activity. Now that it's slowed down, they've seen a tremendous drop. You see other counties like, other cities. Laramie is just the one line above Cheyenne on the bottom. Look at that, 4 million, 4 million, 4.5, 5, 5, 5, 4.6, 4.8, 4.8, 4.9. It's been pretty steady in the city of Laramie. You look at Sheridan, 3, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, drops back down a little bit. So look at Green River, Jackson, Pinedale, Rock Springs, tremendous drops. Rock Springs, as you follow Rock Springs across, they were up to a high of 13 million. Now they're down under 10 million. So tremendous changes for our city's 4% for their share of the 4% sales tax. Now look at the select counties' share of sales tax and use distribution. Once again, look at Laramie County at the very bottom. They're in white. 5.4 million. It's gone up to 6.6, and it's just staying nice and steady. But again, look at the top in Campbell County, Sublette County. Look how those values have dropped significantly. So what we were trying to do, I think, when this whole hardship component came along, during the good times, those rich cities and counties were having a lot of impacts, but they also had increased revenues. And so we wanted to share some of that. Now, I heard in the last amendment that someone said that it's a sacred cow, hardship distribution. I wouldn't say that it's sacred, you know, and for the 8 years ago, when we kind of got started on it 6 years ago, I really worked hard against this hardship thing. And I'll be honest, the last couple of years we've had so much money going to cities, towns, and counties, I just didn't fight it and put my efforts on other things. But I want you to turn, if you would, please. I want you to turn in your budget bill, and I'd like you to turn, I think it's page 118. And I think it's important for you to actually 121. It's important we learn about this, what's happening. This hardship formula and distribution through hardship is not some court-tested funding model with any validity. I'll just tell you that. These were long, hard fights in the JC and on this floor and the other body. So, first of all, this is not a scientific, court-tested, some kind of brought in experts to testify this is the way to do it. And so keep that in mind. This is just what we have done as legislators. And they struck a balance so you can get 31 votes. That's what we do. Okay, if you look on page 121 and just kind of read through that, and you tell me how that works with cities. And what we do is we rank sales tax per capita. Then we flip that ranking upside down, and we say, okay, you guys who aren't bringing in as much sales tax per your population, we're going to multiply your population by 150% instead of just by 100% or 1. So you get credit for people that don't live there, 50% more. That's for the bottom 10% of people that on sales tax per person in their cities. And then we do the next 10%, and we multiply their population by 125%. So they get 25% more people to be counted in the distribution. And then the rest of us, we're counted on the people we have. Okay?
So that's how that works with the cities. Then I'd like you to flip over to page 124 in the budget. This is where it gets fun with the counties. And this is, just flip over and read that. It starts on page 10. Go down to like, or starts on line 10 on page 124. First of all, we multiply each county's assessed valuation by their 12 mills. And then we say, if you have then we add 1.2 million to that, and we see what you could, with 1.2 million in your first 5,000 people by $160, and then your next 20,000 people by $130, and then everybody in your county over that by $100. And if you don't come up to that product of 12 mills plus 1.2 million plus those multiplications, then you're hardship. And you get a certain percentage of what's left over. Now, I just tell you how this thing is. It's not about anything, but it came to a majority. And you folks who have been hardship in the past, you very well might not be hardship in the future, because it's going to be on new tax data and, most importantly, on new census data. And see, we talked about using the 2006 numbers once, and it totally rolled it. And, whoa, in fact, the county that begins with an A, the top of our alphabet, got dropped out. We didn't do it. We stayed with 2,000 numbers. So there's been a lot of things going on in this whole hardship business. Now, back to this amendment. And I've got a handout. If you just look and it says Harshman Amendment. I know the other day on second reading we were tired 2 days ago, but hardship money has gone to just a select few cities and counties. And so 90% of the population has not participated in that plus. And that 90% has been the losers. And so we talk about winners and losers, and I want you to look at this graph, and I put it in a little more detail for you. It's the ones with parentheses around them on the far right are the losers. And I put a little sad face beside them. See that? So it really clearly marked them. And then I put stars beside the winners. So Albany, you're a loser. But you're still a winner. You still get hardship, just not as much. Your hardship's reduced. This amendment doesn't take away all the hardship. I'll get to that in a minute. Bighorn County, your hardship is reduced. Campbell, you get more money because there's less hardship. Carbon County's a winner. Converse County's a winner. Crook County loses some hardship money. Fremont County, you're a winner. All your cities in your county. Goshen County, flip over to page 2. You're going to lose some hardship money. And you can see their totals. Hot Springs, you're a winner. Johnson, you're a winner. Laramie County, you're a winner. Lincoln County, you're a winner. Natrona County, you're a winner. Niobrara, you got that little face. Sorry, you're going to lose some hardship money. Flipping over again, find your counties there in your cities, folks. Park County, you're a winner. Platte County, I'm sorry, you're going to lose some hardship money under this proposal. Sublette, you're a winner. Sweetwater, you're a winner. Teton, you're a winner. Uinta, you're a winner. And I'm sorry, Washakie and Weston, you're going to lose some of your hardship money. Look over on the last page of the counties, please. And you can see, again, I think there's only, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven counties that are going to lose some hardship money. Okay, and the other 16 are going to win some. They're going to get some back because of their population. So what this amendment does, instead of taking the 100% amount of money and taking 11% right off the top, carving it out for these seven counties and the folks, the cities in them, we're going to say we're not carving 11% off. We're just going to carve off 8%. And so now the rest of us, and you guys all get direct distributions too. Don't think that they don't get direct distributions. They get direct distributions plus hardship. So we're just going to reduce this hardship amount from this, what was confessed to me by a legislator representing the hardship county is, by anybody's measure, is too much. 11% is too much. And reduce it down to 8. And it's really about the people of Wyoming. We represent people. Dollars should flow to people. That's where services are provided, to people. Not some deal
That's based on a 2000 census on some deal that was designed to get a few votes. And so it's just too much. And money's too tight, and we got to look at it closer. And so I appreciate any questions and the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment, quite frankly, is an attempt to divide and conquer. And if you go down through here, it's pretty obvious that there are more winners than losers. So I realize by coming to the podium that I'm asking you all to be fair and think about what you're doing and not necessarily think about whether or not you're a winner and loser. We're all taking huge cuts in this distribution, but we're disproportionately cutting the poorest people the most here, and that's inherently unfair. I don't like these sort of battles, and every year we get into these. It seems like the tighter the money gets, the uglier it gets, too. And I don't like this ugliness. So I would really encourage you to stand up for those of us that can barely afford to run our road graders as it is and replace the culverts that we're falling into because we can't afford to replace them and they're 65 years old. We can't afford this. And it's just not fair. So I would urge you to vote no.
Representative Carson.
Did you say senator or representative?
Good representative.
Okay. Oh, geez, I don't even know where to start after that one. I guess for me, this amendment is not number one in my heart. And it really sucks to come from a community that now is a loser. And if you look at the mountain of money and the mountain on this big black graph here, I guess explain to me how that's fair. You know, the whole concept of revenue challenged is to help maintain a baseline for city government. And I know that's important to all of us. You know, I come from a community that has $110 million backlog and infrastructure just in our water. We're never going to get there. We're never going to get there on raising our rates. When I stepped down, retired from the vice mayor position in the city of Laramie, our budget was at $32 million, and this next year it's going to be at $24 million. That's lower than it was in 2004, and not accounted for inflation. If you look at the city of Gillette, and I'm only bringing this up because the bringer of this bill did, they bring in more in just 4% sales tax. That doesn't include all the other taxes that would supply the whole community that I come from for 1 year. So really think, and I think this goes to the wisdom of the JAC, why we started this revenue challenged component is that the minerals are not spread out throughout the state in any sort of equity. We know that. We want to keep the communities that we all have pride in, and I know all of you come to my community and enjoy your time there. We want to keep at least these communities functioning at a baseline. We don't want to let them fall apart. And if we start robbing this revenue challenged thing, we're really in trouble. I agree with the good representative that spoke before me. This is just a poor idea.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you think that, what do they say, 40% of us have been here for less than 4 years, and so some of you have not been here as long as others of us have to hear this discussion and when we actually adopted the hardship category. I'm from a poor tax base part of the state, and I happen to be from a poor county. And in fact, when I was going through all of my notes preparing to come to the session this time and going through all of my papers, I found the assessed valuation and the sales tax for Wyoming for every single city and county for 2004. That's when I started researching this. I thought, what is it in the system that makes where we live poor? And what I found out and how the hardship category came to be is because if you're a county, you get your taxes from the assessed valuation principally. If you are a city, you get your money principally from sales tax. And then the other primary resource for your tax base in Wyoming are minerals. So if you're from a county that doesn't have minerals, then you are profoundly affected, and your tax base is not very good. The exception in the state is the one that has the beautiful Teton Mountains, and they happen to be an aberration in terms in comparison to the rest of us because they have a different kind of a sales. They have a different revenue source over there. But if you look at the counties that are principally hit with this situation, they are the agricultural, the ag-based counties, and the county that houses our state institution of the university because it doesn't pay sales tax. And so that's why it happens to be in this group. So when I asked to be on and was fortunate enough to serve on the local government finance committee, and they spent 3 years analyzing local government funding, and the one thing that was universally accepted in the committee was the category of hardship was appropriate for funding and direct distributions to our communities because there are basic inequities in terms of the community's abilities to tax themselves. So that's why we have hardship. Now, the question before us with this particular amendment is, what percentage of the amount of money we have is the appropriate amount? The amount that has been proposed by the JAC and was unanimously passed was 11%. It was not unanimously passed. The majority passed it. That was unfair of me. And so what you have before you is the discussion of, should that 11% be reduced to 8%? What is the rationale for the amount that you would choose? Unfortunately, we have another amendment coming pretty soon in which all 23 counties agreed universally, their county commissioners, that they wanted to take that 11% hardship and spread it among a greater amount of hardship counties. And so when you reduce, in fact, if you vote for this amendment and reduce that 11% to 8%, then what all of those county commissioners agreed, all 23 counties, you're affecting the amount of money that they recommended be spread to more communities that are impacted. And so there are far-reaching consequences on this one because it impacts more decisions you're going to be making today. I just want you to make your decision based on the facts of why we have hardship and the inability of some communities to raise the tax base to provide the basic services in their communities and their counties.
Representative Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the discussion points of the previous speakers, especially from in regard to the comments made by our good representative from House District 5 when he said, you know, we don't want to have these kind of debates at times on the floor of pitting the haves against the have-nots. The prior work in local governments at their state association meetings, we tried to avoid those kind of discussions, pitting, again, the haves against the have-nots. But we're here, and we're having that discussion, and we have accelerated that discussion to graphical depictions of the winners or losers by sad faces and stars, which, to me, it escalates the some of the feelings that we have in respect to this issue. And we look at this, I believe there were 7 counties with the sad faces. They're the lowest assessed value counties in the state. And when you look at the per capita money that they have from sales tax revenue and assessed value per capita, I think we'd find them to be the lowest. So what these communities that have been highlighted here as the losers, what we struggle with is not whether to build a third swimming pool in a town. It's whether or not we can keep an 80-year-old sewer line in the back alley functioning. So, it's more than numbers, and it's more than smiley faces or sad faces and stars. You know, it's really the reality of the struggles that these revenue-challenged communities have faced. There's a reason why we have done that. The local government financing committee has looked at that and made those recommendations as to what we should be doing there, and and coming back every year and having this debate and bring it to a level of dissension that we sometimes do is, I guess I just don't think that's real productive. But I would encourage us not to support this amendment.
Representative Dirks.
Mr. Chairman, to whatever degree we are leaders of this state, to whatever degree our words and actions lead this state toward unity, it's very difficult to believe that we are setting a very good example to the people with measures like this, and I urge we defeat it.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to confuse this issue even just a little bit more and bring up an interesting part of this discussion that rarely gets brought up, and that's the $120, $130 million worth of dedicated revenue from under the cap dollars that goes to our cities and towns that actually does have a hardship component in it, and which very rarely, if ever, gets discussed. And of course, what we're talking about now is monies in addition to those below the cap dollars. Now, in my analysis of this, and it's been a few, I've slept once or twice since I looked at this closer, but I can tell you when I stand in support of this amendment that what we're doing is bringing in a slightly different way, more in line with the way we calculate our hardship in the below-the-cap dollars. So I would maintain that we are bringing some equity in the way we distribute monies to our local governments, meaning cities, towns, and counties. Now, I don't have a handout to accompany that, but this is the analysis I've done. This is what I've found to be true.
Representative Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think all the other previous speakers have been from the losing counties, and I'm up here from a winning county. I guess I was a little disappointed being from a winning county to see that it didn't go from 11% down to 1%. And I know in most of our other statutes, when we're changing numbers, it seems to me like we're always coming up with 62.738%. And this just seems kind of like a little cutoff of 3%. So I was hoping possibly the sponsor could give us some rationale of why we didn't reduce it just 1% or 10%, how we came up with the 3%. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree with the representative from House District 5. We're pitting poor county representatives against rich county representatives, and we're arguing about the appropriateness of what the formula is. They spent a lot of time developing the formula. I don't know. I guess we could argue for 2 or 3 days if that's appropriate or not. But the fact of the matter is, the counties that are showing their poor counties, they're poor counties, and they need some assistance. You're going to be seeing a bill coming here in the near future, where they're going to ask for some support for a pipeline. Major, major expenditure they're asking for. I voted for it to come out of committee. I will probably vote for it on the floor. But I can guarantee when I go back to my county and my community and try to justify how I voted that way, I can assure you it's very difficult when you hear these kind of arguments against these poor counties. We need some help. Whatever we can do to help them, we would sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Hartsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to answer some questions. The first is about why 11% to 8. Simply trying to strike a compromise. That's what we do here. Preferably, I'd like to see no hardship. And let's talk about the history. I've been here 8 years. When we first started over the cap, now we have a cap, $155 million in severance tax, and we put caps on. because the money used to just flow through here. Legislators didn't really have much say. So we de-earmarked $155 million severance tax cap. And as the good representative from Carbon stated, there's a hardship formula built in that. And for the first time then in 2003 and 4, we distributed over the cap monies to cities, towns, and county. We made a legislative appropriation, first time in history. There was no hardship formula in that. And then in 2005 and 6, we did three distributions in a two-year period. No hardship formula in that. It was just strictly based on population. And then it wasn't until 2007, the 7-8 biennium, that we started this hardship idea. And that's when our revenues were skyrocketing in the state. And, you know, and so hardship has not been in this thing. It's only been the last few bienniums that we've done it. And that was when we were a time of tremendous revenue. Well, we're not anymore. And so this is an issue really of fundamental fairness, because we don't represent poor property or anything. We represent people. Money's supposed to go to people. It does it in our school systems, everything throughout. And so, first of all, this $80 million or whatever we're going to arrive at, $100 million, $60 million, whatever we appropriate, everybody's a winner. It's all over the cap money. Secondly, 8% hardship is a tremendous amount of money. It's 8%. If it's $8 million out of $100 million. Whatever we decide is going to be, it's a tremendous amount of money that goes to just seven counties. Might be fewer counties this next time on the new census. It's going to change. In addition, those counties, everybody shares. Everybody's a winner on the thing. Now, heard talk about a pipeline. You know, we do water projects in this state. I'm assuming that's what it's to for everybody. When this city had a water project, my city, Green River Rock Springs regionalized, everybody's two-thirds, one-thirds. The only time we go higher is when they're a real small community, like Shoshone. We did 70-30, I believe, and you water guys know better than I do on that. But it's been a two-thirds, one-third. That's what we're going to do up in Campbell as well when we regionalize that. Why should they be treated any differently? They have 33,000 people. They're twice the size of Laramie. And so, you know, I think it's all about people. That's who needs services. It's not about a poor piece of sagebrush. Secondly, I never heard any testimony, and let's just talk about what's ugly and what is poor and lack of leadership. And I'll just tell you, like in my city, which is the second biggest city in the state, February sales tax down 33%. 33% from a year ago. Our sales tax is down 26% in the year to date. Cut 30 positions. We now have in the city of Casper two less positions than we had in 1985. So let's talk about pain. When I drive through most of these hardship communities, your main street's a state highway. And I've driven through a lot of them, and they've all been redone, beautiful curb, red bricks, nice dark signposts and lights, beautiful main streets that didn't come out of city dollars. They were state dollars for a state highway. Those are your main streets. I've just driven through them. I drive every weekend throughout the state chasing basketball. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And you think just because you're in a bigger town, you don't feel that. We got a lot of issues. Our courts are jammed. Our jails are jam-packed. We got a lot of needs. All of us do. But dollars follow people. That's the idea. Just like our representation is. Used to be a time in this state when the senators represented counties. It's not that way anymore, because we represent people. And so in fairness, because this hardship thing is not a sacred cow. It's been with us for 4 years, and it was a move to take mineral money that we had excess of and move it to counties without mineral money. Well, those days are over. And so moving it to 11 to 8, I think, is a fair and generous compromise. I know there's a lot of you'd like to see it to zero, but I didn't think that'd be the right thing to do. So anyway, on and for the amendment, and appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment fails. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 31. Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Amendment number 31, third reading amendment, House Bill 1. And if this is a football game, we're now into the second half. This is a complete opposite direction from our previous discussion. If you look at the what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to help revenue counties. I guess I would say that I would agree that our sales taxes in my county and many of yours, and I think it's across the street, are down. And we're still revenue challenged. That hasn't gone away. It's only gotten bigger. So I may kind of sit back here and respond, play defense on some of the discussion here and answer some of the questions. But just for education, what I've done is, in addition to the 11%, or the 5.5% for cities and towns and the 5.5% for counties, I've added $3 million to each one of those. I could get up here and argue in front of you that we shouldn't leave any money on the table, but I don't think that's a wise argument. It hasn't worked today. I guess the whole point of what we're trying to do here in government here is supply the needs of our citizens. I think this is a fair proposal, and I urge your consideration.
Question. Representative Harshman.
You know, I know I probably overtalked that deal, that last amendment, but because it's a danger, and that's the hard part of legislating. You got to kind of feel the mood of the floor. But and obviously, I was on a mission come heck or high water. But I think it's important to get information out. And I the only thing I can say to this is, holy cow. And we've got a hardship component under the cap. We have a hardship component over the cap. And now this is like the third bring it home hardship component. I don't know. I just can't believe it. I should go to people, not to Prairie Land. So on it again. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Carson, for your second time.
Just a little bit of explanation. You know, I didn't want to have the conversation we had on the last, and I'm willing to give the coach a hug. But this is a separate discussion. I didn't want to rob Peter to pay Paul. And I think this is a fair thing to do. If you look at the last couple of fiscal bienniums that we've allocated into hardship, this amount would be about a 15% reduction of what we've allocated over the last 4 years and for hardship. So when we've talked about 10% cuts, this is still a drop in that. I would urge the body to consider this in all honesty, and I appreciate your vote.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 31, House Bill 1. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
Third reading amendment number 31 is resoundingly failed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 7. Representative Hammonds.
Mr. Chairman, I would move budget amendment number 7 and would have my fellow JAC member present it to the body.
Representative Pedersen.
If you reach up in, Mr. Chairman, if everybody on the floor reaches up in their stack, you'll see this. It says Hammonds, Pedersen, Korberg amendment up at the top, and it's total direct distribution to counties. As it works, I didn't go through and do stars and sad faces and things like that. And the reason I didn't do it is because it wasn't brought by us or this is actually brought by the county commissioners at their last meeting. They came forward and they said that this is what they wanted. All 23 unanimously came forward and said that this is the way that they would like the distribution to go. And you can see the way that through the amendment, how this changes all the way down through each one of those areas, and you can see how it corresponds, and you go through 2007, 8, 9, and 10, and then you have the JAC rec, and then the change within the amendment, and the corresponding increase and decrease, and the projected hardship distributions as they appear on the second page in comparison to how it affects the amendment. But I think that one of the big important rules, or one of the big important takeaways from this, is that you had 23 counties who came together and unanimously supported this. This is brought to us by them. It's how they distribute the money among themselves. And so that's why we bring it before you today.
Representative Pedersen, is that – it's neither – you did move it, but it's neither an increase or a decrease. It's just a reallocation. Am I correct on that?
That is correct.
Thank you. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am struggling with this. If you look at your spreadsheet, and I guess I'm the only loser, the biggest loser, my county is losing $226,000. Other counties are losing $69,000, $80,000. I'm okay with losing $80,000, $90,000, $70,000. But you can't disembowel one county. I'm against the amendment.
Representative Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and in favor of this amendment. And, you know, this amendment was brought to us by the commissioners, and they realized that there would be a redistribution of the hardship. But their thoughts were, and they all agreed, that some counties would see a decrease, but they were more interested in more counties being able to participate in the hardship money than not. So, Mr. Chairman, if you look on that page, we had six before, and with this amendment, we would have nine counties that would be treated as hardship. So, I guess it's one of those rare instances where the counties all came together. They were in total agreement. They understood exactly what they were doing. And this is a good amendment, Mr. Chairman, and we need to adopt it. Thank you.
I'm being informed now that it is an increase, and the only relevance is it'll have to be a roll call vote if it passes. Representative Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, that's as I read the budget on line 124, or page 124, line 20, it's $1,200,000 plus than all the other things. Now, then they multiply. Of course, it's multiplied now by 160, your first 5,000 up to 200. And so now this divides the hardship up a little bit. Might bring a few more folks in. But again, this is based on different population projections. Many of you might not even be on this list. There might only be two hardship counties. I know one that's going to go off the new census because we just, when we look at the estimated census and if those numbers still hold. So, it's a revenue increase, as I see it, as I read the budget, because I don't see it reduced anywhere else. And I'd urge you to defeat it. It's just...
I'm now informed it's not an increase for those who are following the action here. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know this is sort of a funny amendment. Sort of seems to be the anti-Goshen County amendment. But more of a serious question. I don't understand if all 23 counties were together, did the Goshen County commissioners make the meeting? I'm just seriously confused as to why the Goshen County commissioners would have said yes to this.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All
Representative Hammonds.
I haven't spoken. Oh, it is.
You have. You don't want to speak on your second time yet.
Actually, I will. I don't need to.
Well, now, wait a minute, though. Did you get the last?
Sorry.
Representative Teeters.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the all that's good and holy. I would just ask for mercy from the body that we don't sacrifice one of our own. I think this is ridiculous. On and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Hammonds, your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is revenue neutral. All 23 counties and their commissioners voted for this unanimously. And the way that it works is it's a, what, you've already, am I just repeating what was said? Okay. What it does within it is a reallocation so that two more counties are included. Three more counties are included. And if you really want to understand Goshen County, this goes back to when I was doing research all by myself, trying to figure out how it works in the state. Population is a component of this formula. And Goshen County is different than the other counties in the state because they happen to have more population that are not in incorporated cities. And so every time the formula is done, you will find Albany County near the top and you'll find Goshen near the top. And that's because of the way that population is dealt with. The rest of us have most of our people are located within our cities, and there's a different formula for that. And it just happens that Goshen, because of their rural agricultural nature, have an awful lot of their population that's just out in the county. And so that's why. Anyway, all of your county commissioners want this, and it includes more people in the category, and so it helps them, and I would hope you would support your county commissioners.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 7 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment fails. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 16. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment 16 to House Bill 1. This is a technical correction for the Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities. All this amendment does is make this effective immediately so that we can begin our work in April instead of after July 1st. I would urge your eye vote.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 16 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 20. Chairman Berger.
I move Amendment 20 to House Bill 1, third reading. This is, again, just a correction. It should be under the direction of the governor. And ask for a favorable aye.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I dropped my... Thanks, Murray. Was that an amendment? Or was that... A clarification.
Representative.
I got it. It was an amendment to the amendment. Okay, that's right.
Representative Jorgensen, we're on third reading amendment number 20.
Correct.
And you're on your first time.
I heard a correction and there were some wording changes, is that correct?
I'll just use this as my second time. The way we had it in the original amendment on second reading was under the control of the governor, and this is to change it to be serving at the pleasure of the governor. So the words used that are generally used in statute are the direction of the governor.
Representative Jorgensen, you might be on your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll accept that. After the discussions we've had this afternoon, when we were talking about schools to be built, schools not to be built, schools to ultimately be built, we were talking about a process that's very sensitive, as we saw. It's a very difficult topic. We dealt with it. We've moved past that. But this just gets to the same question. There was a lot of discussion in the Appropriations Committee about the School Facilities Commission and schools. And what we're proposing to do here is take a commission that has a matrix to determine priority of projects based on criteria, carefully evaluated. At first we had it done by an outside company. We decided to do it in state. It's been very thoroughly done. It changes. There are changes in these projects just as there are changes in highway projects. If we think that the discussions we went through today will not be repeated tens of times in a future session, if this commission loses some of its independence and ability to deal with the issues, we're misleading ourselves. I urge you to defeat this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 20 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment fails. Division being called for. All those in favor, please rise. You're getting a little lethargic out there. Third reading amendment number 20 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 23. I need Representative Wallace. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Well, who had authority to present it on her behalf?
I'll move it.
Make sure you move it. The chair is going to recognize the Majority Floor Leader, who's a proxy for the sponsor. Wait a minute.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman Anderson, I believe
you,
that order.
Mr. Chairman, I move. If I got the right one here, I move amendment number 23 to House Bill 1, which is Representative Wallace had it, and it's to take half the money that would be appropriated from account 3 in Senate File 36 that's going to come up, and appropriate that much money to account 3, $8 million. $207,500. I don't think there's that much money left in account in the general fund. So my recommendation would be a no vote.
Is there anyone else for their first time? Question being called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 23 to House Bill 1, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Amendment, third reading amendment number 23 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration, and Representative Throne, again, you may have all the remaining time, would be third reading amendment number 26. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to because of the wonderful discussion we had earlier on mineral severance tax and where the money goes and how we ought to save more when the good chairman of labor presented his amendment, I am going to withdraw my amendment, I would advise everybody to keep this really wonderful information prepared by our wonderful staff. I didn't ask them to prepare this. It's entirely neutral, just information, useful information, and I'd urge everyone to keep it. And that's all I have to say.
Third reading, amendment number 26 is withdrawn. House Bill 1, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Barbudo. Berger. Blake. Flickery. Bonner. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Byrd. Kennedy. Carson. Childers. Cohey. Connolly. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Edmonds. Esquivel. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Aye. Hales. Hallinan excused. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Aye. Illaway. Aye. Yagi. Aye. Jorgensen. Aye. Kimball. Aye. Landon. Aye. Lockhart. Aye. Lubno. Aye. Madden. Aye. McKim. Aye. McComey. Aye. Miller. Aye. Millen. Aye. Moniz. Aye. Patton. Aye. Peasley. Peterson. Aye. Peterson. Aye. Philp excused. Korberg. No. Roscoe. Aye. Semlick. Aye. Shepperson. Stewart. Aye. Stubson. Aye. Teeters. Aye. Thompson. Aye. Throne. Aye. Wallace. Excuse. Wallace excused. Zwanitzer Dan. Aye. Zwanitzer Dave. Aye. Mr. Speaker. Aye. Gilmore. Gilmore excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Anderson? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 53 aye, 3 no, 4 excused.
House Bill 1, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 1 has passed the House. Good work, ladies and gentlemen. Chairman Berger, members of the Appropriations Committee, and all of you, you've done fine work on the budget. We're at that order of business of reading and signing of enrolled acts.
House Enrolled Act number 4 being original House Bill number 4, an act relating to criminal procedure being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign enrolled act number 4 being original House Bill number 4. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 5 being original House Bill number 12, an act relating to juvenile detention, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 5 being original House Bill number 12. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 6 being original House Bill number 13, an act relating to alcohol, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 6 being original House Bill number 13. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 7 being original House Bill number 16, an act relating to private school licensing, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 7 being original House Bill number 16. I have so signed. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 15 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bagby, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Peasley, Quarburg, Throne. Excused, Patton. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 65 engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bagby, Barbudo, Gingrey, Peasley, Quarburg, Throne. No, Blickery, Kennedy. Excused, Patton. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 68 engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bagby, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Peasley, Quarburg. Excused, Patton, Throne. Signed, Representative Quigby, Quarby, Quarburg, Vice Chairman.
Committee announcements. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number four, Education, will meet at noon tomorrow in room H10 to discuss interim topics. The Senate hopes to be there. Your select committee on tribal relations will meet at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in the Senate corporations, where we will discuss interim topics.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet 5 minutes after adjournment this evening, February 25th, in room 302, to discuss Senate File 22, State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement, Senate File 64, Safety Belt Violations 2, Senate File 45, School Bus Seat Belts, and Senate File 35, Tolling Authority for I-80.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number three will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock H11 to discuss intern topics.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to cover the following bill, Senate File 31, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room H8 to take up Senate File 25 engrossed liens and Senate File 14 engrossed circuit court hearings of municipal violations by juveniles.
Chairman Illaway.
Privilege of the floor.
Any other committee announcements? Chairman Landon. Excuse me, Representative Illaway.
Your committee number 10 will meet 15 minutes after the noon adjournment tomorrow to consider interim topics in room H17.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee appropriations number 2 will meet in room 204 immediately upon adjournment to hear Senate File 7, Rangeland Health Assessments, Senate File 13, Economic Analysis, and Senate File 48, Licensure of Midwives.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Agriculture Committee number 5 will meet tomorrow with the Light Committee of the Senate to discuss interim topics upon noon adjournment in the Senate Ag Room S-15.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 in H-18 to consider three Senate files, 66 industrial siting amendments, Senate File 59, Workers' Compensation Firefighters, and Senate File 52, Reduced Cigarette Ignition Propensity, and also to have the initial conversation of the House side Minerals Committee on interim topics.
Chairman Illaway, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just want to remind everybody about the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, legislative reception tonight. When you can get out there at the Holiday Inn between 5 and 7.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until Friday, February 26, 2010, at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The House is adjourned until Friday morning, February 26, 2010 at 10 a.m.